November 1993, Disney Animation Studios, Burbank, California. In a darkened screening room, Disney Animation Chief Peter Schneider sits with his arms crossed as hand-drawn images flash on the screen before him. He's watching the latest story reels for Toy Story, a film that's set to become the world's first computer-animated feature film. Disney's funding Toy Story, but it's not a Disney production. It's the work of an animation studio called Pixar. But Pixar's never made a movie before, and it shows. Toy Story follows the rivalry of a cowboy doll named Woody and an astronaut action figure named Buzz Lightyear. Woody and Buzz are vying for the attention of Andy, the kid that owns them. But right now, the tale fizzles rather than sizzles. Schneider watches as sketches of proposed scenes flick past. Woody shoves Buzz out of the bedroom window. Andy's other toys are horrified.
Woody, you deliberately threw Buzz out the window.
Hey, it's a toy world.
As Woody claims Buzz's spot on Andy's bed, Mr. Potato Head and other angry toys give chase.
Hey, Spuds for brains. What do you think you're doing? Off the bed. Hey, off the bed.
You gonna make us, Woody?
No, he is. Slinky! Get up here and do your job! Are you deaf? I said take care of them!
Schneider sighs. Woody's supposed to be the hero, not a toy box tyrant. He's yelling at the other toys and giving the audience zero reasons to root for him. Schneider rues the day his boss, Jeffrey Katzenberg, forced this project on him 2.5 years ago. Schneider's not alone, either. Few people at Disney appreciate computer animation, and even fewer have confidence in Pixar. Its creative chief, John Lasseter, is an animator Disney fired 10 years ago. And then there's Pixar's owner, Apple co-founder Steve Jobs, a man many view as so arrogant that his own company sacked him. Jobs has spent $50 million keeping Pixar alive, and its film deal with Disney is all he's got to show for it. But not for long. The screening ends, and the lights go up. Schneider approaches Pixar's creative chief, John Lasseter.
John, that was awful. Woody's a total jerk.
Lasseter looks hurt, but he knows Schneider's right.
Yeah, I get it. Look, we can fix it.
No, John, this movie just isn't working. It's hopeless. You need to go and fire your people, because this isn't going into production. Toy Story's canceled.
Lasseter's eyes bulge in panic. Cancellation means death. Toy Story's the only thing stopping Steve Jobs from shutting Pixar down. What none of them see at this moment of budgetary concern is that Toy Story could usher in a brand new world of technologically advanced, vividly imaginative animation, but only if the studio survives. Lasseter knows only one man can save Toy Story now. Jeffrey Katzenberg, the last Disney executive still on Team Pixar. But Katzenberg's destined to turn from friend to foe.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. In our new season, we're animating the conquest for the cartoon crown between DreamWorks and Disney's Pixar. Their war for box office billions shaped the childhoods of millions, ushered in the age of computer animation, and spawned global blockbusters like Toy Story, Shrek, Finding Nemo, and Kung Fu Panda. But their fight wasn't just about money. It was personal, too, fueled by the feuds between Disney chief Michael Eisner, his former lieutenant Jeffrey Katzenberg, and a vengeful Steve Jobs. And it all began a long time ago in a studio far, far away from Hollywood. That studio was Lucasfilm, the empire of Star Wars and Indiana Jones creator George Lucas. This is Episode 1, The Outcasts. February 1983, Lucasfilm's computer division, San Rafael, California, 12 miles north of San Francisco. In a room full of computers the size of filing cabinets, Disney animator John Lasseter and his colleagues huddle around a computer monitor. Lasseter leans in closer with his mouth wide open. Behind his round spectacles, his small blue eyes blink in disbelief. On the screen is a driver's eye view of the road to Point Reyes, a scenic cape on the Pacific coast. And what's blowing Lasseter's 26-year-old mind is that everything he's seeing is computer-generated. The road rises and falls as the wooden posts and yellow shrubs that line the roadside flip past. He's never seen computer graphics that look this real before. The Disney engineers who invited him to tag along on this trip were right. Lucasfilm really is leading the way in computer animation. Lasseter turns to Ed Catmull. Catmull's the co-director of Lucasfilm's computer division. He's a bearded guy with big glasses and the unhurried demeanor of a university professor. Lasseter points at the screen.
That's amazing.
Why, thank you.
No, really, that's mind-blowing. Hey, could you make a forest?
Sure, we could. The challenge would be the time it takes to render.
So, you can? Fantastic.
Lasseter cuts in. He doesn't care about the technology, only the results. He believes computers will transform animation, and he's on a mission to prove it.
See, I'm working on a film proposal based on The Brave Little Toaster by Thomas Dish. You read it?
No.
It's about a toaster, a lamp, an electric blanket, and a vacuum cleaner. They get left in a cabin in the woods and then go to the city to find their owner.
Okay.
I want to do it with hand-drawn characters on computer-generated backgrounds. Computers are so much better at depth. They make things look really three-dimensional. Also, with computers, we could alter the backgrounds easier than by hand. We should work on this together.
Catmull smiles at Lasseter. With his baggy jeans and Hawaiian shirt, Lasseter resembles an overgrown kid. Catmull will love to say yes. He's dedicated his career to developing the technology needed to make computer-animated movies. And it's rare to find an animator who shares his vision. But Lucasfilm didn't hire him to make movies.
The idea is fascinating, and I'd love to do it.
Great. But it's not that easy.
Computers are getting faster, but it'd still take 100 supercomputers 2 years to render an entire movie.
Also, you know, our role at Lucasfilm is to develop digital tools to support our filmmakers, not to make movies. It's not really my call. You'd have to ask George Lucas himself. Okay, but if I persuade Disney to do it and Disney persuades George Lucas to let you do it, then you do it, right?
Well, in that scenario, yes, I might.
A few weeks later, Disney Animation Studios, Burbank. In a meeting room, Lasseter sits alone feeling nervous. He's just been ordered to pitch The Brave Little Toaster to Disney's CEO, and he's not sure why. Lasseter springs to his feet as Disney's CEO Ron Miller enters the room. He's a former NFL player who still looks capable of cracking skulls. Disney Animation boss Ed Hansen scuttles in after him.
Lassiter grins.
Hey, how's it going?
Miller ignores Lassiter and sits. Hansen does the same. They look at Lassiter. Lassiter looks back. Miller scowls.
I'm waiting.
Lassiter gulps and starts his pitch. He recounts the brave little toaster's story and shares how he loves to animate inanimate objects like desk lamps. Miller and Hansen don't react. Lassiter explains that Disney's live-action film studio is already helping him with the project, but neither man seems impressed that he's ignored the chain of command. Finally, Lassiter explains why he thinks computers are the future of animation.
Computers will do for animation what Steadicams did for live-action movies. It'll open up new possibilities. We'll be able to do things that are currently just too time-consuming to draw by hand. The brave little toaster will be the start.
Miller stands and eyes Lassiter.
How much will this cost?
Same as a regular animated feature.
There's no point in computer animation unless it's faster or cheaper.
And with that, Miller walks out. Hansen races after him. Lassiter stands there alone, unsure what just happened. 5 minutes later, Hansen calls Lassiter into his office. Hansen doesn't even ask Lassiter to sit.
John, the project you were working on is now finished, so your employment at Disney is now terminated.
What? You're firing me?
Correct. Go clear your desk.
Lassiter leaves Hansen's office in a daze. Sure, he knew most Disney animators hate the idea of computer animation. But he was sure they'd change their minds once he proved its value. And yeah, he also knew Disney expects employees to rigidly adhere to the chain of command, but he never thought that was a fireable offense. He grew up wanting to be a Disney animator. Now, he's banished from the Magic Kingdom. After learning of Lassiter's firing, Catmull creates a job for him at Lucasfilm's computer division. Catmull hopes the former Disney animator will help his team make better computer-animated short films. But storm clouds are gathering over Lucasfilm. George Lucas is cutting back after his expensive divorce, and he's given Catmull an ultimatum. Find a buyer for the computer division or get shut down. Fall 1985. In his near-empty mansion in Silicon Valley, Apple's 30-year-old co-founder Steve Jobs is spitting venom.
John Sculley will destroy Apple. He may be the CEO, but he doesn't understand product development. His vision stops at the latest sales reports.
Catmull isn't sure what to say. He came here hoping to get Jobs to back a management buyout of Lucasfilm's computer division. But it's mere days since Apple fired Jobs, and the humiliation's still raw. Jobs catches himself and pivots back to business.
So, I'm going to start a new computer company. That's why I'm interested in you. I think the Pixar image computer you're building at Lucasfilm could be the next leap forward in home computing. Enabling anybody to create 3D graphics will unleash people's creativity on a huge scale.
Catmull interjects.
Steve, our computer will likely cost more than $100,000. Its utility is in making movies and medical imaging. It's not a machine for the home.
People said that about computers before I founded Apple. They were wrong. I was right. Here's how I'll structure the business.
Jobs hands Catmull an organizational chart.
Steve, I don't see our animation team on here.
That's because we don't need them.
Catmull's heart sinks. He still dreams of computer-animated movies. For him, the Pixar computer is just a step towards that goal.
Then, he notices something on the chart.
Steve, it looks like I'd no longer be in charge.
Yes, I'll run the business.
I'm kind of doing that already.
Yes, but you'll get to spend 2 years working directly with me. You'll learn so much in that time. Your skills will reach a truly incredible level, and after those 2 years, you'll be plenty capable of running the business.
Catmull can't believe his ears. Jobs is selling him a demotion as a once-in-a-lifetime career opportunity. He's heard enough.
Steve, we're flattered that you're interested, but we want investors, not a buyer.
Jobs nods.
I respect that. I don't want to be a passive investor, but if you change your mind, call me.
Catmull spends the final months of 1985 failing to find investors. So as the year draws to a close, Catmull
reluctantly calls Jobs. Jobs drives a hard bargain. Lucasfilm wanted $15 million. Jobs gets them to take $5 million. He names the business Pixar and hands 30% of the stock to the employees to ensure they stick around. Catmull also convinces Jobs not to fire Lasseter and the animation team by arguing that their short films will help promote Pixar's technology. For Jobs, a man worth $185 million, it's a minor investment, but it lets Catmull and Lasseter keep on chasing their computer-animated movie dream. There's just one problem. Jobs doesn't want to make movies. He wants Pixar to make creating 3D computer graphics as widespread as writing letters on word processors. And that means Catmull and Lasseter will have to face down Silicon Valley's most headstrong executive to keep their own dream alive.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind.
Spring, 1988. Pixar offices, San Rafael, California. Steve Jobs scrawls a big red circle around the word deep on the whiteboard and turns to face the Pixar executive sitting around the conference room table.
Deep cuts, that's what is needed.
It's been 2 years since Jobs bought Pixar, and it's in trouble. The company sold just 120 Pixar image computers and lost millions doing it. All that's keeping the lights on is Jobs' personal fortune. But Jobs' willingness to spend down his millions is fading fast.
These cuts must start next week.
The meeting ends on a downbeat note. But as the others leave, Pixar animation chief John Lasseter corners Jobs.
Steve, I got a request. I want some money to make a short animation.
Jobs says nothing. He's just been telling Pixar to cut, cut, cut. Now Lasseter wants money to burn.
$300,000 should be enough.
Jobs remains silent. He likes Lasseter. His animation team doesn't earn a dime. But right now, it's the only fun thing about Pixar. Jobs ends his silence.
Are there storyboards?
Downstairs.
10 minutes later, Jobs watches as Lasseter pitches his animated short film. It's called Tin Toy, and it stars a clockwork one-man band toy.
So, Tinny, this one-man band toy, is in the room when he sees a baby. It's entering the room, you know, drooling and tottering. Tinny's charmed, but then The baby starts throwing toys around. It's no longer cute. It's a big, drooly monster.
Jobs edges forward in his seat.
So Tinny flees under the couch, and there are other frightened toys hiding there too. But then the baby falls and bangs its head. Wah, wah, the baby starts crying. The toys stay put except for Tinny. He feels bad for the baby, so bravely he comes out of hiding to cheer it up. The end.
Lassiter suddenly remembers to add a business case.
Oh, it'd also be a great showcase for our tools, as we'd have to animate a human baby.
Jobs wants to save money, but he's a sucker for anything that brings computing and art together.
You've got your money. All I ask in return, John, is that you make it great.
In August 1988, Tin Toy debuts at a computer graphics show in Atlanta and gets a standing ovation. The baby looks more like melted plastic than flesh, but its lifelike movement raises the bar for computer animation. It also convinces many that digital cartoons can do emotion just as well as hand-drawn animation. Tin Toy wins that year's Oscar for the Best Animated Short Film. Armed with its Academy Award, Pixar starts making computer-animated TV ads for brands like Tropicana and Listerine. But the ad gigs aren't enough to stop the losses. And with Jobs' total investment in Pixar nearing $50 million, desperation sets in. Pixar sells its computer division. Jobs fires half the staff and forces the rest to surrender their stock options. Jobs bought Pixar believing that creating 3D graphics would become a daily activity for computer owners. Now, he knows he was wrong, and Catmull and Lassiter were right. It's Hollywood or bust for Pixar. But there's only one movie studio willing to hear Pixar out. March 1991, Disney corporate offices, Burbank. Jeffrey Katzenberg enters the conference room and smiles at the team from Pixar. Katzenberg is the short, balding boss of Disney Studios. He joined Disney in 1984, and ever since, he's served as CEO Michael Eisner's most loyal minion. Together, they've shaken the sleepy studio from its slumber, and nowhere has Katzenberg's impact been felt more than at Disney Animation. When he joined Disney, the animation studio was bureaucratic, conceited, and living on past glories. So he popped the animators' swollen egos, hired outsiders to freshen things up, and stomped on any executive who dared stand in his way. And it paid off. In 1989, The Little Mermaid proved Disney had rediscovered its magic touch for the first time since Walt Disney died. Katzenberg takes a seat at the head of the table. All of Pixar's top executives are there, including Steve Jobs, President Ed Catmull, and Creative Chief John Lasseter. Katzenberg repositions his oversized glasses and starts.
If I had my way, we wouldn't be having this meeting. It's clear that the talent here is John Lasseter.
Katzenberg looks at Lasseter. Ever since Tin Toy wowed the animation world, he's been trying to get him to quit Pixar and rejoin Disney.
But since John refuses to come work for me at Disney, I'm going to get him by giving Pixar a chance to make movies for Disney. So tell me, what movie do you want to make?
Lassiter replies,
"We have an early idea. It builds on Tin Toy's concept of toys being alive and having emotions. Working title is Toy Story."
Katzenberg sits back.
"I hate that title."
"It's a working title. The rough arc is the kid who owns Tinny loses him, so Tinny goes on an adventure to reunite with his owner. You see, being played with is the most important thing for a toy. It's the emotional foundation of their existence."
"Interesting. It needs more work. So here's how the deal's going to work. One, Disney has ultimate creative control."
The Pixar team looks worried. Katzenberg smiles.
"I know what you're all thinking. You're thinking that everybody says that I'm a tyrant. Well, thing is, I am a tyrant. But that's because I'm usually right. So yeah, creative control is ours, okay? Two, Disney will own the rights to the movies and the characters."
Jobs interrupts.
"No, we co-own the movies and share revenue equally."
Katzenberg knows Jobs is in no position to make demands. Pixar is nearly dead. His millions are withering away, and he's not tasted success since Apple fired him.
"Steve, if that's what you want, you can leave right now."
Jobs doesn't reply. Katzenberg waits for a moment and then continues setting out the terms.
3. Disney gets full ownership of Pixar's technology.
Jobs jerks upright.
That is never going to happen. If you insist on that, I will walk.
Katzenberg nods. He's already gotten Jobs to surrender ownership of the movies. There's no need to humiliate him.
Understood. So, that's our baseline. Let's get into the details.
Jobs and Katzenberg spend weeks battling over the terms. But with no leverage over Disney, Jobs is forced to cave time after time. The final deal is loaded in Disney's favor. Pixar's small share of box office revenues means it'll make very little money unless Toy Story is a major hit. The movie will be promoted as a Disney production. Pixar will only get mentioned in the small print. Disney's also free to cancel the deal at any time. And while it's a 3-movie deal, Disney doesn't have to do the second or third film. But while Jobs leaves the talks battered and bruised, Catmull and Lasseter are delighted. They're finally getting to make a computer-animated movie. But they also know that if they screw up and Disney pulls the plug, it's all over for Pixar. And Toy Story soon runs into trouble. Whenever Pixar updates Disney on its progress, Disney responds with a long list of changes. The biggest changes are to the main characters. Tinny is replaced by a cowboy doll called Woody. Katzenberg tells Pixar to make it a buddy movie where Woody and a spaceman toy called Buzz are forced to put aside their differences. Katzenberg also insists Pixar make Woody more edgy. So Pixar turns Woody into a grizzled hard-ass who runs Andy's bedroom like a tyrant. But when Pixar shows Disney the new Woody, all hell breaks loose. November 1993, Disney Animation Studios, Burbank. Lasseter bursts out of the screening room into the hallway. There's panic on his face. Disney Animation Chief Peter Schneider's just told him Toy Story's canceled. He looks up and down the hallway. He spots Katzenberg walking away and gives chase.
Jeffrey! Jeffrey!
Katzenberg stops as Lasseter catches up.
Jeffrey! Peter's just canceled our movie.
He has? Well, given what you just showed us, I can understand why.
We can fix this. Just give us the holidays to rework it.
What makes you think you can fix it?
Because I get it now.
We've been making someone else's movie, but it won't be good unless we make it our movie. Come on, please, give us a chance. All right, John. All right, you got until the new year. But in the meantime, production stops. Now, if you want to keep the people you've hired, get Steve Jobs to pay for them. And if you don't come back with something good, it really is over.
Katzenberg returns to his office and calls Disney Animation Chief Peter Schneider to let him know he's just given Pixar one last chance. Half an hour later, Disney CEO Michael Eisner calls.
Jeffrey, what's happening with Toy Story? I'm hearing it's a turkey and Peter shut it down, but you overruled him?
That's correct. It is a turkey, and I gave him until January to fix it.
Well, give me a reason why I shouldn't overrule you right now.
Under our contract with Pixar, our outlay is limited to $21 million, and we spent most of that already. If the production goes over budget, it's Pixar's problem. There is no downside risk for us. We have nothing to lose and everything to gain from letting them try one last time.
Eisner goes quiet. He never believed in Toy Story, and he dislikes how Katzenberg's increasingly throwing his weight around. But after the huge success of The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, and Aladdin, well, there's no questioning his creative instincts.
Okay, Jeffrey, go ahead.
Katzenberg's won Pixar its stay of execution. But it still needs to deliver a Christmas miracle to save Toy Story. And it needs to move fast, because the knives are out for its only ally at Disney.
We get support from Court. You know, the way people work is changing, and the workplace itself needs to change too. But what if flexibility wasn't just an option? With Court's flexible furniture solutions, you can create agile work environments that become your team's greatest advantage. Save capital with swing spaces, attract top talent with collaborative environments, and create connected spaces that employees will love. Flexibility is the future, and Court Furniture Rental helps you embrace it. Learn more at court, that's court.com/office.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
February 1994, Disney Animation Studios, Burbank. John Lasseter bites his bottom lip as he waits for Disney's executives to finish their discussions. Lasseter's just delivered Pixar's do-or-die pitch to save Toy Story, a reworked story that he and Pixar's other writers hammered out over the holidays. Edgy Woody is gone, replaced by clean-cut Woody, the wise leader of the toys in Andy's bedroom. He's no longer the bad guy, just jealous at losing his status as Andy's favorite toy to Buzz Lightyear. Now, when Buzz falls out the window, it's not because Woody pushed him, but because a prank went wrong. It's now the movie Pixar wants to make. Question is, will Disney like it too? The Disney executives stop talking. Disney Studios chief Jeffrey Katzenberg speaks first.
It's good. Not great, but good. I think this movie's back on track.
Everyone looks at Disney Animation Chief Peter Schneider, the man who tried to kill Toy Story last November. He smiles.
I agree, and I'm impressed at how fast you turned it around.
The Pixar team feels a flood of relief. Toy Story's back from the dead. But while Pixar lives to fight another day, Katzenberg's heading for a fall. April 1994. Disney's executive dining rooms, Burbank. In a private room, Katzenberg and Disney CEO Michael Eisner are having lunch, and there's tension in the air. 2 days ago, Disney President Frank Wells died in a helicopter crash. Eisner quickly added Wells' duties to his own to reassure the markets. Now, Katzenberg wants to know where that leaves him. Eisner starts the conversation.
What's going on, Jeffrey? Why the urgent lunch request?
Katzenberg is on edge. He didn't sleep last night. He can't believe Eisner's ignoring the obvious question. Who will be Disney's new president? Katzenberg thought he was next in line. So why is Eisner keeping the job for himself?
Michael, last year at Aspen, you said if Frank wasn't around, I'd be president. But now that Frank's gone, you've taken that role for yourself and you haven't even spoken to me about it. Did you mean what you said or have you changed your mind? I mean, just be honest with me, all right?
Eisner doesn't want to get into this. Not now.
What's the alternative? The alternative to being honest with me? Well, listen, if you can't even tell me the truth, then you've told me everything I need to know. You know, Michael, you can trust me to be as good as Frank was.
I trust you, but not like I trusted Frank. I have to tiptoe around animation because it's your fiefdom. I can't be tiptoeing around parks and live-action features. But I might consider you for president later if you earn it.
I've worked by your side for 18 years. I've already earned it. Make me president for 2 years, and if it doesn't work, fire me.
No.
Look, if I have no future here, just tell me and I'll go.
Are you saying that if I don't give you what you want, you'll walk?
Yes.
Fury grips Eisner. Frank Wells isn't even buried yet, and Katzenberg is making threats.
You're holding a gun to my head.
Eisner rises from the table and storms out. It looks like Eisner and Katzenberg's relationship is over. But that afternoon, Eisner makes peace. He tells Katzenberg that he's a fantastic executive with a bright future at Disney, but now's not the time to discuss who replaces Wells. Katzenberg feels reassured that his reward is coming. That summer, Katzenberg's star rises even higher. In May 1994, Disney releases The Lion King. It rapidly becomes the biggest animated movie of all time and cements Katzenberg's reputation as the man who led Disney Animation into a new golden age.
He feels certain that the call from Eisner making him president will come any day now. And in September 1994, Eisner finally calls Katzenberg to his office. In Eisner's office, Katzenberg blinks in shock as the news sinks in.
You're firing me?
Eisner nods. He decided to fire Katzenberg after their bust-up over lunch, but he wanted the turmoil surrounding Frank Wells' death to ease first. The animosity between Eisner and Katzenberg has been brewing for years. Katzenberg's also been feeding stories to the press to put pressure on Eisner to give him the president's job. Eisner locks eyes with his former lieutenant. The news release announcing your departure went out the moment you entered my office. Katzenberg fumes. The Lion King is the blockbuster of the year. He rebuilt Disney animation and spawned a new generation of characters for Disney's theme parks and merchandise. And this is his reward? To be cut down in his prime by the man he served loyally for 18 years? Katzenberg walks back to his own office, fuming. He wonders how many of the executives he passes knew he was getting fired before he did. His secretary stands as he returns.
Jeffrey, I'm so sorry. It's okay. Any calls? Steve Spielberg's on the line from Jamaica.
Katzenberg enters his office and takes the ET director's call.
Steven? You're in Jamaica?
I'm staying with Bob Zemeckis. Listen, I just heard the news, and I wanted to say congratulations on getting fired.
Hey, yeah. Somehow I've just pulled defeat from the jaws of victory.
He's kind of funny.
What was that?
Bob says we should do something together. Where you're going, Jeffrey, you don't need roads.
Katzenberg smiles.
He's just had a brilliant idea. What do you mean by you, Steven? I'm thinking we.
October 12, 1994. The Peninsula Hotel, Beverly Hills. In a vast room, reporters and some of Hollywood's most powerful executives are gathered for a news conference called by Katzenberg. It's less than 2 weeks since he left Disney for the last time. But word is, he's already got a killer comeback plan. Cameras flash as Katzenberg walks on stage. Then, another man appears. Katzenberg's friend and billionaire music mogul David Geffen. And then, the world's most famous film director, Steven Spielberg, joins them. The three Hollywood power players pose for the cameras and then take their seats. Katzenberg grins. They're about to announce the birth of the first new Hollywood studio in 60 years. But it won't just do movies. It'll produce TV shows, publish video games, and release records. And it will be home to a new animation studio designed to challenge Disney. Katzenberg looks at Geffen and Spielberg and then addresses the audience.
I look at the three of us and I figure this has got to be the dream team. It's certainly my dream team. Today, we start a revolution, a Hollywood studio driven by artists and ideas.
Katzenberg grins again. Michael Eisner better watch out. DreamWorks is coming, and it's going to lay siege to his magic kingdom. And animation will be its battering ram. On the next episode, Steve Jobs turns the tables on Disney. Katzenberg betrays Lasseter, and Eisner tries to suffocate DreamWorks. From Wondery, this is episode one of Disney Pixar versus DreamWorks for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. If you'd like to read more about Pixar, we recommend To Infinity and Beyond by Karen Pate and The Pixar Touch by David A. Price. I'm your host, David Brown. Tristan Donovan wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound design by Josh Morales. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our managing producers are Tanja Thigpen and Matt Gant. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
You know how how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.